Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here for the 31st and final day of January. And as we're at the end of January here, it's awfully cold still all over our country, and certainly lots of weather to talk about. We'll talk about that in just a minute here as we get started. This is our program, part of the Faith Radio Network, in which we talk about the news of the day from a distinctly Christian perspective, because we are part of a kingdom that knows no end. And whatever transitions we find ourselves in life, whatever is going on in the course of the journey, sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard. But what's true about this great journey is that it is one that will have no end. That tomb is empty, and there is always hope and always future in the beautiful kingdom of Jesus. We celebrate that each morning here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by my good friends Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault, who just do such a great job, as I say, each morning, but mean it each morning, in producing the show and bringing guests from around our country. And Paul Perreault, since when is minus 22, as it was on my car thermometer this morning, when does that feel actually somewhat balmy, where I just thought, wow, we got a really good break from the weather this morning?
Well, considering we have barely any wind this morning, that makes it feel a lot better than 50 below, like it, you know, the wind chill was yesterday morning, so I'll take that.
Yeah, absolutely. I see that it's all heading towards the East Coast now, so our listeners in Hartford, Connecticut, I know it's been cold already, but it stands to get colder from what I understand.
Yeah, they're going to have some high is only like in the low teens or whatever today. It's going to be chilly there, but they're going to rebound like we are during the weekend. So
yeah, we were texting our friends in Scotland yesterday pictures of some of the weather, some of the thermometers, and all we got back from one of our good friends was sheesh. That's all that was the response, was sheesh. And I think that's the response all of us have been having these last couple of days, as we've anticipated the polar vortex. The polar vortex has come, and I'm looking forward to the weekend when I understand, at least in the Midwest and here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, we're going to touch 40. We're going to have almost a 70-degree change.
I know. It's insane. Actually, when you look at it, the last 7 days, Minnesota set a record as being the coldest part of the lower 48. And, of course, anything touching us, North Dakota, South Dakota, they've been feeling the radiant benefits of all that. But it's for the last 7 days, Minnesota's been the coldest in the nation. Alaska's been warmer.
Yeah, just amazing. Well, regardless of the temperature, the news continues to cycle forward, and we got some great guests in hour one here on Faith Radio Mornings, where we'll be joined first by our good friend Ben Johnson of the Acton Institute. Ben and I are going to cover some of the headlines out of Washington, D.C. in terms of the Democratic Party and some of the candidates that have emerged as leading contenders in the 2020 election cycle. Then the second half of this hour, I'll be joined by our good friend as well, Bruce Ashford, who is dean of a seminary, and Bruce and I are going to talk about sort of the future of secularization and globalization and just a right to life and ethic of life, some of these topics that Bruce does such a great job with. So it should be a great first hour ahead. Welcome, everybody, to Faith Radio Mornings.
This is my right.
It is about 9 minutes past the top of the hour here on the 31st of January in Faith Radio Mornings, and that music means that we're joined by our regular Thursday morning guest, Ben Johnson of the Acton Institute. And Ben, I understand you've been sort of traveling through snow and weather yourself in the Michigan area, I believe?
That's right. I got to see how you guys in the upper Midwest actually live. I mean, in Grand Rapids, we had our annual retreat at the Acton Institute. And it just so happened that we got, 17 inches of snow, 30 below with wind chill. So we canceled the second day, and it took me, I think it was going 25, 30 miles an hour on I-96.
Wow. Yeah, it's not fun to travel through that amount of snow. It's one thing to get through maybe 3 to 4 inches or something, but if you're talking about that amount of snow, I'm amazed that you got anywhere at all, Ben.
Well, I'm amazed that way in life.
It's Ben Johnson of the Accident Institute, and we talk often about some of the current events and social issues in our country. And Ben, I know that the last couple of weeks we've seen sort of the front runners maybe emerge in the Democratic side of things, like the Elizabeth Warrens, the Kamala Harris. There's some people we're waiting on announcing their candidacy as well. But regardless of who's announcing their candidacy in the Democratic Party, it's been really interesting to see what were once considered fringe ideas and policy initiatives have become sort of the mainstream as the Democratic Party has moved left. And what are you noticing when it comes to wealth taxes and maybe Medicare for all of these kinds of topics?
Well, there are a couple of different things that have happened. First of all, Kamala Harris had an incredible launch in terms of her announcement this past weekend. And then over just this past week with Anderson Cooper on CNN and her town hall, she's sort of moved the Overton window in the party well to the left. You've seen with all of the candidates, as far as I know, the only declared Democratic candidate who has not embraced Bernie Sanders' call for Medicare for All is South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg. So he's somewhat of a dark horse candidate, we might say. The only declared candidate who has not done so, even Kirsten Gillibrand, has embraced Medicare for All, which is a $40 trillion program over 10 years, $32 trillion unfunded, no matter what the tax rates may be raised to. So that's one issue in itself, sort of establishing an NHS-style nationalized healthcare system along the lines of what they have in Canada. Second of all, you've seen calls for a 70% tax on top marginal tax rates. Julian Castro, who is another candidate, again, somewhat of a dark horse candidate, has called for up to 90% taxes to be instituted in this country. And then Elizabeth Warren has called for a wealth tax. A wealth tax is different than an income tax. An income is on what you make. A wealth tax is double taxation. It's the money that's already been taxed when you got it as income. But if you happen to save some or invest in such a way that you've squirreled money away from the government, they want a second bite at that apple. So Elizabeth Warren would impose a 2% tax on fortunes of $50 million or more, and then it's 3% if you have $1 billion in total assets. Now, that's total assets. That doesn't mean you've got that in cash. That means that you may own an estate, you may own a farm, you may own a business, and if that is valued at $50 million or more 1 year, then either you have to sell off part of the stock or you have to sell the inventory, or you have to find some way to turn an illiquid asset into a liquid asset and come up with the money and pay it back. So you've seen some incredibly left-wing proposals come up. Really what it comes down to is there's a struggle right now within the Democratic Party, and they're quite candid about this, between economic leftists and identity politics leftists. All of the identity politics leftists have essentially gone on board with the economic proposals, Medicare for All, free, quote-unquote, free college tuition and programs of that sort, a large expansion of the federal government, federal spending, and federal taxation. But the economic populists are people like Bernie Sanders who emphasize those issues. The identity politics people would be people like Kamala Harris, who, although they embrace those issues in order to appeal to the Bernie bros and people in, say, towns in Pennsylvania and middle America. Kamala Harris is more primarily interested in intersectional issues, feminist issues, and Kirsten Gillibrand, for example, is interested in running essentially as Hillary Clinton 2.0 as the feminist candidate. So which one of those streams is going to win out? I don't think you're going to see one or the other win out. I think that ultimately you'll have an identity candidate, politics candidate, who co-opts just enough of the economic message to be viable, or vice versa.
And Ben, as we evaluate all these different policies and the initiatives around them, I think one of the things I've noticed in my 7 months in this host chair is that there seems to be a disconnect so often between the importance of policy for these candidates and their sense of just sort of persona and presence, charisma, kind of the rock star sort of thing that maybe we saw at first with Barack Obama when he was elected. And there's a sense in which as these candidates come out, it seems like Kamala Harris might have a bit of that it factor in the sense that she commands some kind of attention regardless of policy, whereas some of these other candidates may not. And seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that really matters as much as anything else in terms of getting traction within the party.
That matters tremendously, in regardless of which party you're in, by the way, but especially among the Democratic Party. The old joke is that Republicans always nominate the candidate who's next in line, Bob Dole, Mitt Romney, usually people who've run before and didn't quite make it, they end up over the finish line. Democrats tend to be somewhat more captivated by personality. You saw that with Bill Clinton, who, if you remember, came out of nowhere in 1992 in order to win the nomination. Certainly, Barack Obama gave a tremendous speech in 2004. That catapulted him. And Kamala Harris has gotten this tremendous boost from the way that she announced. She's got a great presence. Beto O'Rourke is another one to watch through his charisma, his sort of youthful good looks, and his following on Instagram. You'll see that he'll play a role. Julian Castro is yet another one, although I don't think he's got quite what it takes to get over the finish line. But those would be the people to keep an eye on. Now, the issue would be that, again, when you look at the very policy and the core of the kernel of what they're proposing, it is well to the left of anything we've ever looked at in the United States within our lifetimes. And particularly, for example, Kamala Harris has compared ICE, the immigration officials who arrest drug traffickers and who care for children who have been abandoned at the border, to the Ku Klux Klan. It's very important that we pinpoint where this is coming from, which is an idea that the United States has been premised upon certainly uniquely sinful and uniquely immoral ways of living in the past, and that that must be rectified. And so someone has to command the resources of the federal government and redistribute them to historical victims and dispossessed peoples groups in order to make all of this right. They view themselves as on sort of a crusade to right the historical wrongs of the United States. No matter how charismatic that may be, the ultimate end is going to be something that's disastrous.
Talking with Ben Johnson this morning, the Acton Institute, who, of course, has that it factor we've described this morning among some politicians. And, Ben, I'd be curious your thoughts, too, and just in terms of what you described with paying attention to the policies and what really matters there, some of the teeth that's within them. It's not necessarily a policy thing, but we did see that the Democrats wanted to strike "so help you God" from the oath taken in front of key House committees. And there is quite a bit of backlash from that. But to your point that you just made, we do need to pay attention to what people are actually saying more than just the persona.
Well, you're right. I have the cousin it factors, more or less, but I've got that. Yeah, but you're exactly right. The most important thing for our purposes is not whether someone comes across well on television or someone is likable, which is what we Americans tend to focus on when we're choosing a candidate. We will say he's someone I'd like to sit down with. I go to a barbecue with this person. And the fact is that doesn't really matter whether that person is on our side or their side, whichever our side happens to be. What's really important is, what is this person going to do when they get into office? And so Kamala Harris at the town hall talked about abolishing private insurance altogether. So there isn't the pretense of, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. This is, you will take the doctor that we tell you no matter what. And if you think about that program, that's precisely what they have in other countries, where the government determines not only what doctor you go to, but whether you get coverage or not. And anyone who thinks that's a good plan in every aspect would have to remember two words, and heaven help us, but they're Alfie Evans.
Talking to Ben Johnson again this morning about some of the different candidates. One more quick thought here, Ben, before we head to break. I see that Howard Schultz is getting some traction, the former CEO of Starbucks, that he wants to run in sort of a moderate, independent kind of platform because he sees both sides having gone too far in either direction.
He's, as you mentioned, the CEO of Starbucks. And he's running essentially as the old-time Democratic candidate, as sort of what would have been the Walter Mondale wing, maybe, or Gary Hart wing of the party at one point. And he was shouted down because they're saying he would split the vote. Donald Trump managed to win the Republican nomination because there were 16 Republicans instead of just one candidate running against him. And they believe that he won because Hillary Clinton was sort of historically unpopular. If someone comes in and splits the anti-Trump vote from their point of view, then that person's reelecting Donald Trump. But in fact, former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg has said as much. Bloomberg may run as a Democrat. He's changed his party registration. But the fact is, I always think that's sort of bitter talk from people. The fact is, I believe in a free market, and I believe in a free market in politics. If your party is offering what people want, then you don't need to worry about a third-party candidate. If it's not, someone will fill that vacuum with a superior product that appeals to more people. And if that product happens to be Howard Schultz, well, then be with them. And if he happens to split a vote that's in favor of abortion through 9 months, then God bless Howard Schultz.
Great thoughts as always, Ben. And when we come back in just a minute here, I'd love to change the topic a little bit, get your thoughts on some really troubling news out of Virginia with an abortion bill that has been proposed that would allow abortions all the way up to the point of birth, and just where we're headed with that kind of conversation and this ongoing tension in the pro-life in our country. So more to come with Ben Johnson next here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings, chatting with Ben Johnson this morning about some of the different headlines going around in our country. And Ben, I saw some interesting news, some troubling news out of the state of Virginia, in which Democratic delegate Kathy Tran has introduced a bill that would legalize abortion up to birth. And I know if you're a student of history at all, there have been various views on abortion. Even some Christian theologians would have suggested in the 4th, 5th, 6th century that it was not at conception that the soul entered into the body. But boy, there really is, this is a really unusual view to suggest that you could have abortions all the way up to birth. I just think how out of the mainstream that is these days.
It is far out of the mainstream. There's been polling that's been done on this, and something like 82% of Americans oppose this kind of an extreme abortion bill. The bill that she's introduced in Virginia is called the Repeal Act, which would repeal any pro-life measure that's on the books. It's very similar to the bill that Governor Cuomo just signed in New York, which, again, repeals everything, establishes abortion on demand as an inalienable right through all 9 months of pregnancy. And so when she was questioned point blank on the floor of the House of Delegates by a Republican member, he said, would this bill allow someone to have an abortion even if she was at the cusp of giving birth, even if she was dilated and ready to go and about to have a child, and if she changed her mind at the very last minute? Under the duress of pregnancy, under the pain that she's experiencing, could she have an abortion? And Kathy Tran responded, my bill would provide for that. Almost as troubling is not only does it allow abortion through all 9 months, but if you have a Born Alive Infant Protection Act, as many states do, which says if during a botched abortion, which is more common than anyone likes to admit, a child happens to be born alive, the physician who is performing that abortion and his attending staff would have to try to save the child's life. In the case, if you have a repeal act or a bill like Governor Cuomo has signed, then a child who's born alive can be allowed to die on his or her own. You don't have to provide any care for that newborn baby whatsoever. That's only one step away from what Kermit Gosnell was doing in his abortion mill in Philadelphia. So that's the way that we're going. And Governor Northrum of Virginia was asked about this on radio. He was asked, what is it that you would do if a child is born alive? He said that that child would be resuscitated if that's what the mother wants. So a child who's born alive is now a matter of choice, not a matter who not an alienable rights. He has no right to life. This is not a child of God who deserves to have that life nourished and nurtured, but instead is someone whose very life, which is now undeniable in every regard, is subject to the whim and will of other people, even though that person's done nothing wrong.
It's just so troubling on so many levels. I do have a hard time believing it's going to gain any kind of traction given where we are in this conversation, Ben. But boy, it's hard for me to see how we can conflate the ideas of the needed conversations of women's rights in this country and have it be then at the altar of a unique, independent individual and the babies. We can separate these conversations about the need for women to be treated so much better in our country, and there really is the need for that, without having to conflate this into some sort of women's right conversation in terms of abortion.
That's exactly right. Women do need to be treated with complete and absolute equal respect in every regard. And I think that the best way to do that is precisely to give them all of the facts about what's happening, as well as the facts of many women regret their abortions. Every year at the March for Life, the most powerful witnesses from those who are with a group called Silent No More, women who have had abortions, In some cases, the husbands or boyfriends who in some cases pressured them into it. But quite often, we call it a woman's right to choose, but many, many women who are having abortions feel pressured by those in their life, or they feel that they don't have the resources to raise children. And the most empowering message is one that says, yes, you can. You have the ability to raise a child, and it won't destroy your life. In fact, in many ways, many women who've had crisis pregnancies, whom I've spoken with personally, and who give their testimony at Silent No More and other institutions like this, say, having that child was the most difficult thing that I've ever done. It was also the most rewarding thing, and it's brought power, it's brought peace, it's brought direction to a life that was adrift until that moment.
It's Ben Johnson from the Acton Institute. Ben, thanks as always for the wisdom that you bring into the program. I just really look forward to these Thursday conversations and not making a big deal out of it today. It's my last day here in this host chair before transitioning into some new roles at Faith Radio, but we'll certainly miss our conversations in this kind of format, and you've just been amazing, so thanks so much.
Well, you are always amazing, and thank you for what you've done over the past 7 months. You've done a tremendous job bringing not only information and entertainment, but to do all that and bring the wisdom and word and the power of God to people is a rare gift, and you've managed to do that for several months over all of the stations of this network. So may God bless and direct you in all of your further paths.
Thanks so much, Ben. I look forward to the next time we have a chance to chat, and have a great weekend ahead. Stay warm, and we'll be in touch soon.
God bless, and thank you.
We'll take a break here for some Lighten Up, as well as a little short bottom of the hour news segment, and looking forward to the next half of this hour as well, in which theologian Bruce Ashford will join us. And we're going to talk a little bit about these right to life conversations, but also having a consistent ethic of life that appreciates the dignity of all human life, not just that of the womb. Well, of course, it's the Super Bowl this weekend, and some headlines coming out that doctors warn football fans of increased heart danger during the Super Bowl. The stress of your favorite football team losing the Super Bowl could send you to the emergency room. Dr. Victoria Shin at Torrance Memorial Hospital cites a study in L.A. County that shows an increase in heart attacks following the L.A. Rams' 1980 Super Bowl loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Meanwhile, there was a decrease in the number of heart attacks in 1984 when the then L.A. Raiders beat the Washington Redskins. Dr. Shin says the evidence is anecdotal, but it's possible that stress and binge eating that day contribute to the increase of heart-related trips to the ER. Thank goodness I don't care at all for the Patriots or the Rams, and so I'm just going to have to worry about eating on that Sunday. Yesterday, we were joined in studio on Faith Radio Mornings by Pastor Katie Beasley, who talked about behavioral management and how the millennial generation struggles with these kinds of concepts.
We don't really know what to do with who we are, and so we keep running the rat race, and I think my generation probably is on that big time, and the one that's a little bit in front of me, is that we're all sort of trying to figure out behavior management while our, is it Richard Rohr that talks about building those glass, building your, the castles, and
yeah,
that you spend the first half of your life building the castles, and then the second half of your life just destroying them.
Right.
And the behavior management thing works when you're trying to build the castle, but like in the second half of life, when life is basically just ripping it to shreds, the behavior management just doesn't work. And so I think that's where the anxiety is created. I think that's where, like, what do you do with this then? I don't even know how to be myself. And then there's all kinds of weird messages out there with a culture about, like, take care of yourself. And there seems to be a large disconnect. And I feel like that's what I would say is the ramifications of what my generation is struggling with.
Katie came in studio yesterday along with Taylor Bongard, who's another local pastor, part of the Next Generation, in which we talked about what we see in the future in the kingdom, what they see as this great story continues to unfold, and that there will be people in the generations to come that will continue to bend their knee and follow Jesus. That's the great hope of this eternal kingdom of which we're a part. If you want to catch all of what they had to say in our hour-long conversation yesterday, you can head to myfaithradio.com, search for The Morning Show, and catch all of that. It was the 7 o'clock hour local time. Well, up next, we'll be joined by Bruce Ashford. We've already been chatting on Skype here off air. He's the professor of theology and culture and dean of faculty at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. And Bruce wrote a great article recently about the idea of a whole life, pro-life ethic.
For those who say there's no place for the Bible in national issues, they've got a lot of history to deny. This is Jim Garlow. There's no question that the Bible speaks to personal faith, to family, to parenting, but it also speaks to community life, civil governments, and yes, national issues. Critics say it was never the intention of our founding fathers to bring the Bible into national issues. Well, I beg to differ. The fundamental principles of our founding fathers and the documents they produced are rooted in biblical faith. What do you suppose they quoted the most when they wrote? The Bible. And the second most quoted document? It was those quoting other people who were quoting the Bible. Make no mistake, the founding fathers understood biblical principles, and so should we. There's more on being well-versed at jimgarlow.com. We'll do our part, keeping you informed at jimgarlow.com.
Bruce, one of my favorite moments during my time here as Faith Radio Morning's host is when you chose Guns N' Roses' Welcome to the Jungle as your intro song. It made my head just about explode because I couldn't figure out how a dean of a seminary and a college and professor of theology and culture could bring Guns N' Roses into a morning show.
Listen, I just had to do something to try to be stride by stride with Pedro the Great, the greatest radio host on the air. So I had to, if I didn't have quite the flair that you did, maybe my walk-on music could.
Well, I don't know. I think it's evidence of your profound spiritual faith. And it's just, you know, I follow you, Bruce, as you follow Jesus. That's how we roll. And love having you on the program here. And it's Bruce Ashford, and writes Christianity for the Common Good. And if you're listening this morning, BruceAshford.net is a great site to go. Bruce does such a good job commenting on the church's ever-unfolding dance with the culture. The church has to shift while it stays tethered to its historical truths, but it has to shift how it maybe presents its message and the kind of things it has to talk about. And one of those things, Bruce, is in this article. You have titled it "The Single Greatest Cause of Our Time: Building a Whole Life Pro-Life Ethic." And I love how you start this article. You say the Christian life should be in every way a precursor to and an anticipation of Christ's promise that he will return one day to set the world to rights. On that day, everything that darkens the world and degrades our lives will pass away. Christ will renew all things. This is the Christian hope, and this hope sustains the greatest cause of our time, human dignity. And I just haven't thought about it in those terms, Bruce, and when I read your article, and I just thought, wow, that really is so true, isn't it, is that human dignity and the wonderful image of God that we all bear, regardless of our situation, really does call us to an entire whole life ethic.
Yeah, it does. You know, I think Christian teaching gives Christians in the United States or in any country, gives us the ability to transcend the partisan divide in some way or another, because in any nation, the divide is almost always secular. And so human dignity does that for us. And here's the deal. I think most conservative Christians, Bible-believing Christians, do have a pro-life ethic, but it's mostly a pro-birth ethic. And that's very good to have a pro-birth ethic, but we need to be pro-humanity after the unborn baby is born. And so I just, in this article, I mentioned a number of different ways in which human dignity is undermined and humans are degraded and demeaned. And it goes all the way back to Cain killing his brother Abel. So do you want to walk through a couple of those?
Yeah, you know, I just think it's really interesting that you point out how its secularization and globalization have really led to the degradation of human dignity. And I wouldn't have made those connections about how we're increasingly globalized. Certainly the secularization where we're making a break mm-hmm. from faith is part of it. But tell us a little bit about globalization and how that has really impacted the sort of the degradation of a human being.
Yeah, I don't see globalization as entirely being in a good category. In a situation before Christ returns in which there is still evil and always will be evil in the world, I do not like power to be concentrated in the hands of a few. And globalization tends to concentrate power. And what happens is you have immoral market agents like sex traffickers who now can market their product, like young women, pre-adolescent girls and so forth, globally and often without being punished, with impunity. And so that's a serious degradation. Jesus gave serious admonition about loving children and taking care of children, and there are serious warnings against abusing them.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Bruce, when you say that and just in terms of how pervasive it becomes, it sort of reminds me a little bit of the Tower of Babel story in which God divided up people through the languages. And it was partly because, and he says nothing will be impossible to them if he doesn't do that. But in the ancient text, it literally says no sin will be impossible. There's this sense in which you start getting this momentum of sin that just begins to go viral. And it's part of what we see in globalization is in the interconnectivity that there's no limits to how we can reach people with some of the just horrible sex trafficking, some of these kinds of topics.
And if you want to just reflect for a moment on what can happen when power gets in, is concentrated and then is put in the hands of the wrong people, think about communism and Nazism, you know, and the just unbelievable degradations caused by both of those. I think in the States, there is an impulse, a Marxist impulse right now, building maybe even a massive wave of Marxism with younger people. And, you know, Marxism proposes to take all power and put it in the hands of one big corporation, the government. And I just think with the doctrine of sin that Christians have, we need to be very careful with that, because if you get rid of, you know, secularization means that we are displacing Christianity. And when you displace Christianity from the center, you're also displacing Christianity's doctrine of human dignity, created in the image and likeness of God. Christ shed his blood for all of us. And then humans are usually looked upon as a means toward an end. And so if we're inconvenient for the state, then we're done away with in one way or the other.
And there certainly is the sense in which ideological purity and adhering to a certain kind of social or political position is really sort of the spirit of the age, not just here, but in other parts of the world. And we've seen the rise of sort of ethnic cleansings and some of the power that comes with that really does degrade human life as well.
Yeah, and we just saw, you know, over the past few days in New York and Virginia, the abortion laws, and the one in Virginia, you know, the governor basically talked about, he basically approved of infanticide in certain instances of killing a baby post-birth if the baby was handicapped and didn't meet the standards of consciousness and full functionality that a human being would typically have. That's not surprising to most of us. The majority of America's most influential ethicists are pro-infanticide, and in Great Britain. I mean, there's a ton of them. Dozens of them, very influential. And the logic is this. If you're willing to degrade an unborn being in a womb, you know, 10 days before it's born, you're going to be willing to degrade that same being, kill it 10 days after it's born. There's not a much difference at all between those two things. And I think what Roe v. Wade did is it numbed America's collective consciences and normalized lethal violence against the weakest and most vulnerable among us. So that infanticide is really not going to be that hard to accept. And then if infanticide is not hard to accept, neither is euthanasia, physician-assisted suicide. And then once those things can be accepted, then that can be eventually done without consent. Hmm. Now, the baby is always killed without the consent of the baby. I mean, that's obvious. But with older folks in the West now, usually elderly people are killed with their consent. But there's coming a time in which elderly people are going to be killed without their consent. But this point has to be made. But we can't blame Roe v. Wade. We got to go all the way back to the institution of slavery. Our country culturally was founded on the horrible institution of chattel slavery, where slaves were viewed as property. They were sexually abused. They were treated as workers, wombs, sex toys, animals that were sold down the river. Families were ripped apart repeatedly. And this was like an environmental disaster, I say in the article, on the moral ecology of our nation, a disaster from which we have not yet recovered. But we can't blame slavery. We've got to go all the way back to Adam and Eve, and actually to Cain and Abel, where Cain considered his brother not worthy of life. Cain made himself into a god. And anytime we degrade other human beings, we are making ourselves into a god. We are grasping for autonomy, seeking to be Lord and God and the master of another person's fate. Mm. And so I just think as Christians, this is the great cause of our day, is even if nobody else does, even if the right and the left selectively appreciate some lives and degrade others, we as Christians can appreciate all lives.
Such an important. It makes perfect sense, Bruce. And we'll take a short break. When we come back, I want to revisit that Cain and Abel story with you just a little bit, because I think what's so compelling about that story is after Cain kills his brother Abel, God does say to him that be real careful here, Cain, because sin is crouching at your door and its desire is to master you. And when you talk in the way that you do, that we begin to sort of accept things as just sort of normative, like maybe killing babies in the womb and euthanasia and stuff, this is part of the dynamic power of sin that sort of hardens the heart. And I want to get your take on that next on Faith Radio Mormon.
He's making diamonds, diamonds, making diamonds out of dirt. He is refining, and in his timing, he's making diamonds out of us.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings, here at about 9 minutes before the top of the hour, having a insightful, somewhat difficult, but really important conversation with Bruce Ashford this morning around just the importance of maintaining the dignity of life. And Bruce, we talked before the break a little bit about the references to the Cain and Abel story, and I'm really compelled by your thoughts in which you talk about how we begin to accept certain practices that are at times horrifying, but they become somewhat normative. But that really is evidence of the historic power of sin, isn't it? That it doesn't, it's not just something that we do that sort of breaks God's moral code. It really is a power at work that enslaves us.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's a lot of analogies we can make with sin. A good one is cancer, that it is a dynamic and progressive poison that eats at us and kills us. You saw it inside of Adam and Eve's hearts when they sinned, but then interestingly, it became explicit in their sons, Cain and Abel, that you had one son who was a lover of God and the other who was a hater of God. And Cain's hatred for his brother ultimately arose because of his hatred for God, that he despised God. And when God corrected him about the offering that he bring, instead of repenting, what Cain did is he whined and called into question God's judgment. And then he killed his brother. And the voice of Cain, the Bible says, of his blood cries out from the ground. And I think the point of my article, and I think something that we as Christians need to reflect on, is that the voice of Abel's blood is crying out from the ground, and that it's joined by a chorus of other voices crying out from the lynching ropes of early and middle America, crying out from the concentration camps and gulags and gas chambers of the Nazis and the communists, crying out from the abortion mills, which, by the way, have killed, you know, at least 10 times as many, I think something along lines of 10 times as many Americans as have been killed in all of America's wars put together.
Mm.
But not only crying out from the abortion mills, but crying out from the sex trafficking slaughterhouses, whatever you want to call them. And what my hope and prayer, and the reason I love coming on the show with you is because I know you and I share this view, is that Christians can transcend the partisan divide. We have been discipled by secular radio talk show hosts and secular political commentators on the left and the right. We've sat in our homes for hours and hours a day, letting those people shape our view of the world. They tell us what the greatest evil in the world is, in their opinion. They tell us how to be saved from it. It's always a political solution. And so it's like a secular religion that's given to us, and we're discipled by it. And what we as believers have to do is we have to go back into the Bible and let the Bible story of the world shape us. And when the Bible story of the world shapes us, human dignity is going to be at the absolute forefront of what we live for and speak on behalf of and promote. And if we do that in a consistent manner, you know, have a whole life pro-life ethic, as Christians, we can be interesting again. We can't be easily categorized and therefore dismissed as the hypocritical and bigoted special interest arm of, you know, one or the other major political party.
Yeah, Bruce, I think it's, you know, I remember you made the point when we first talked early in the year several months ago, and you talked about being discipled by news organizations, and it's really stuck with me. I've used it many times since, and even thoughtful, like, who is discipling my thinking, and what am I engaging with? And I love your invitation. We have just about a minute left here, but it just calls to mind the story of Acts 2, in which the church was living a different kind of life that was separate from, but within the culture. They didn't just, you know, bunker themselves behind walls, but they didn't acquiesce to culture either. They were right in the midst of it, living a different way of life and therefore shining a light in the world. And that really seems the invitation for us today as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I just want to take a minute and thank you for hosting the show over the past year and, you know, and thank Faith Radio for everything that you do. And thank those of you who are listening out there in radio land for putting up with Peter and me occasionally also. And I hope that over the course of the next 10, 20, 30 years that we as believers can lock arms together and do something special and speak a good word into a really bad moment in our nation's life.
Well, the feeling is mutual, Bruce. I just, it's been, I think, the greatest privilege of being in this chair is being with the listeners day in and day out, and then being with people like you where, you know, so often we're living such separate lives, but this program in interesting ways to me has brought voices together that we can have a common voice and a common future as we participate in a story much bigger than our individual lives. So really appreciate the work that you do. I know this isn't the end of our conversations and looking forward to whatever the future holds.
Thank you, Peter. Wish you well, and look forward to seeing you maybe when you guest host in the future.
That sounds great. Thanks, Bruce. Have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll take a break here for just before we wrap up our first hour of the show and preview what's coming up in hour two here on Faith Radio Mornings. Difficult topic to talk about with Bruce Ashford, but such an important one, and I love that he left us with a message of hope that the church can carve out a different kind of space in the midst of all of the political conversations of our day, not being discipled by Fox News or CNN, but being discipled by the beautiful kingdom of God and Jesus our Savior. It does call into mind that Acts 2 passage in which they write, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God. And here is the thing that was so interesting about that. In the midst of all the persecution, they still enjoyed the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. That is the great mission and message of the church, to be within but apart from the culture as we shine the light of the eternal kingdom of Jesus into this world. Well, looking forward to hour two here, where Professor Jim Bilby will join us in studio and do our last Ask Anything segment together. And then a special guest will be joining us for the second half of hour two. So more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.